deepest, darkest Reading to come and share with us his research. Theo did his PhD at the University of Potsdam, followed by a postdoc at the University of Essex, which I think was where we first met, wasn't it?
Yes, I think so.
And then a postdoc at UCL in the Human Communication Sciences Department, which may or may not exist anymore. Has it been restructured?
Yeah, it doesn't exist anymore as such.
He broke it.
It's me to blame.
And then has moved on to University of Reading, and you are professor of multilingualism
and language development.
Language development at the University of Reading. I do have notes. Of course, I wear my glasses, so they're kind of useless. Yes, and you are the director of the Clinical Language Sciences Department at the University of Reading, also affiliated with the School of Psychology, and also a member of the relatively newly formed group that some of us have been involved with to some degree, the Center for Literacy and Multilingualism. And Theo's research interests are quite wide, I would say. You're interested in lots of different things, in first language development, second language acquisition, syntax, sentence processing, and linguistic disorders, and particularly SLI, and comparing SLI against children with SLI against children who have other linguistic profiles like bilinguals, which we will hear about today. Is there anything else I wanted to say about you? Just that we're really delighted to have you here, and thank you very much, Theo.
No, thanks very much, Vicky, for the kind introduction and for inviting me. So as Vicky said, my research interests range from typical to atypical, from children to adults, and I've been looking at different populations. So I'm going to start by giving you the big picture about my research, and then I'm going to present three studies if we have enough time. If we don't have enough time, I'm going to skip the last one. So the big questions in my research is, how do language systems develop? Looking at monolingual children, bilingual children, adults. When there is a language breakdown, when we have a language impairment, how does the language system break down in a systematic way? And then looking at different populations of children. And how does language relate to other cognitive systems? How does language relate to general intelligence, memory, and executive functions? Now, why is this important? There are theoretical reasons why this is important, and also practical ones. In terms of the theoretical reasons, if we know how language develops in typical and atypical children, then we can understand better how we process language, how language develops, how the system of language is structured, and also understand better the nature of language impairment. And also, how does language, how is the language system part of cognition? At the practical level, that can help us develop language assessments and also language treatments for children who have a language impairment. But also it can help us develop curriculum from an educational perspective, especially for bilingual children, in terms of the first language and the second language. Now, today I'm going to present some studies looking at the acquisition of definiteness across different populations. And my background is in linguistics, so I'm going to do some intro into what definiteness is, so that we understand the different conditions and what does it mean for children to acquire definite articles, indefinite articles. So definiteness is a semantic notion that is realized cross-linguistically through different linguistic means. So we can have three morphemes like in English, so we have the definite article and the indefinite article. And the same thing happens in Greek, we have different forms. But we have other languages that have bound morphemes to express definiteness. So you may have a morpheme which is part of a word. And that is the case in Arabic. And in Turkish, we have case to express definiteness. So in every language, definiteness is expressed in a different way. So when we're thinking about bilinguals, it's very important to know how is deafness expressed in the first language, because this may have effects on the second language. And within definiteness, we have definite expressions and indefinite expressions, like the definite article and the indefinite article. Within each one of them, we also have different functions. So here we have an example of a definite expression like the, to express a familiar, something which is familiar to the speaker and the hearer. So we have the example, I saw a bird and a cat sitting by a tree. The bird flew into the sky and the cat ran away. So we're talking about a specific bird that is known to the speaker and to the hearer. That's why we say the bird and the cat. So this is called the anaphoric context. So we introduce something, a bird, with an indefinite article, and then because it's a known entity, we use a definite article to refer back to it. Now we can use the definite article there also in a different context, which is called the bridging context, or first mentioned definite expressions. So here we can use a definite article to express something which is known to the hearer and the speaker, not because we introduced it in a sentence, but because of the world knowledge. So we know that jars have lids. So we can say, Jane wanted to open a jar. She removed the lid and scooped into some jam. So we say we use the lid, although we haven't introduced the lid before in the sentence. So it's again, we're using the definite article, but the child needs to know that, you know, the world knowledge gives them the information. This is old information. Now, with the indefinite articles, we have something similar. So we have some conditions in which the context gives you the information and others where the world knowledge gives you the information. So here we have an example of a specific context where something is known to the speaker and it may not be known to the hearer or it may not be known to the hearer. So the example here, I saw a bird and a cat sitting by a tree. If someone says that, then the speaker knows about which bird and which cat they are talking about because they saw them sitting in a tree. The hearer may or may not know that. So we're using the indefinite article to introduce something that is known to us but not to the hearer. We have another context which is called non-referential context, and here we have an example. I would like a bag to put my clothes in, but we're not talking about a specific one. So I may not refer to a specific one. I'm talking about a bag in general. So here, that's why we have a minus speaker and minus hearer. So we're talking about an entity, but not a specific one. And the last one is the one where it's the world knowledge that gives you the information. Again, it's minus speaker and minus hearer, and that is called the predicational context. So if we say a policeman has a bat, then we're not talking about a specific bat again. We know that policemen have bats. So the world knowledge tells us that it is an indefinite context. We're not talking about a specific one. So in our study, we wanted to look at the effects of how do children acquire the definite article and the indefinite article by looking at those specific contexts, because we wanted to see whether it matters if the information comes from the context, from pragmatics, or whether it comes from world knowledge. So we had those five conditions that I just described, and for each one of them, to be able to use the definite or the indefinite article, you either have to be very sensitive to the context, to the pragmatics, or you have to have the world knowledge that tells you this is definite or specific or non-specific. Now, we wanted to look at how children acquire those definite and indefinite articles across many different populations that have different characteristics. So we were interested in monolingual children, in bilingual children, children with specific language impairments, and children with autism. Now, you may ask, so why do you want to compare those groups? What is the significance of comparing them? The comparison between the monolingual and the bilingual children tells us something about how does the language system develop if you have typical language development, if the system is intact, but you have one language interacting with another one. The study on specific language impairment is quite important because it tells you how does language develop if you have a language impairment in your language. And I don't know how familiar people are with specific language impairments, so I created a slide with some of the main characteristics. So children with specific language impairment have a mismatch in development. So the cognitive abilities develop within norms in a typical way, but their language abilities are behind. So that's why we say there is a mismatch in development. Now for English, the children with SLI have difficulties with grammatical morphemes like tense marking, past tense ED, third person singular S, and some studies have shown that they have also difficulties with definite articles. So we wanted to see what happens in terms of definite articles and indefinite articles. They also have difficulties with complex sentence structures, they have limited vocabulary and difficulties to repeat non-words. Now, children with autism have a slightly different profile. So for children with autism, the main aspect that is affected is not supposed to be grammar, but pragmatics. So it is use of language in context. They have also atypical social interaction, atypical communication, restrictive and stereotype patterns of behavior, interests and activities. So in terms of language, people have observed deficits in pragmatics and also in prosody, but there are very few studies looking at grammatical development. So articles are quite interesting because they involve pragmatics. So we wanted to see if we have a phenomenon like articles that involve pragmatics, is that going to be a difficulty for children with autism? The data I'm going to present come from two large studies. The one study is the study on specific language impairment and bilingualism, and the second study is the study on autism. But for this talk, I've put the two together in order to be able to make comparison also between those groups. So the study on SLI and bilingualism was funded by the Dutch Research Council, and this was a large project comparing children in the Netherlands, in the UK and in Greece. So these were the populations that we were looking at. So we had typically developing children, children with SLI who were monolingual, and typically developing bilingual children, all of which have Turkish as a first language, and then Dutch or English or Greek as the second language. So we picked up Turkish because there are sufficient numbers of participants in all three countries, and also the language is very well described, so we could look at transfer effects from the first to the second language because we knew what the first language looks like. Now, in terms of definiteness, Turkish doesn't have definite articles. It has indefinite articles, but these are like numerals. So for definite articles, the prediction would be they may be dropping articles because they don't have a definite article in the first language. So the first study is looking at the acquisition of definite and indefinite articles in English. Monolingual children, children with SLI, and monolingual age control groups. So I'm going to pick up those two groups because it's impossible to present the data from all nine groups just in 50 minutes. So this is looking at specific language impairment compared to typically developing children. We selected children who were at the beginning of the primary school, so between the age of 5, 5 and a half, and then the first 3 years of primary school. The older ones were at the age of 9. So we had the children with SLI monolingual age controls, and in research on SLI we very often have language controls because we want to see if we pick up children who are younger, do they perform and they have the same language abilities to the children with SLI, are they going to perform in the same way? And this table shows us how we match the children. So the children with SLI had lower grammatical, lower grammar than the other two control groups, but we match them on the vocabulary with the younger children. So these are vocabulary matched controls. And we can see this is the standard score. 76 is below one standard deviation. So it's below the norms. To elicit definite articles, we created stories. So we would give a story and the child had to respond to a question. So for the anaphoric, for example, we would say, a bird and a cat were sitting by a tree. One of the animals flew into the sky. Which one? So they had to say, the bird. They could have said the cat. We weren't particularly interested as to whether they will say the bird or the cat, but we wanted to see whether they will use the definite article. It's old information. We introduced it into the discourse, so they had to say the something. For the bridging, we didn't introduce because it was the world knowledge that gives you the information. So Mary wanted to eat a banana, but first she had to remove something. What did Mary need to peel off? So we were expecting them to say the skin. And so here we can see the results. These are percentage correct, and the dark gray is for the anaphoric context where the pragmatics give you the information. The pale is for the bridging where the world knowledge gives you the information. And here we have SLI, age controls, and language controls. So we can see that more or less in all three groups, they are better when the world knowledge gives you them the information than when the pragmatics gives them the information. But also the children with SLI were performing similarly to the vocabulary controls and at a lower level than the age controls. So that's not surprising. It tells us the children with SLI have a delay in that particular aspect, but they show the same pattern of performance. For the indefinite, we had again stories. So for the specific, we would say, I bet you have something hanging on the wall in your room. What is it? So they had to say a picture. So it is plus speaker, so the speaker knows what picture they're talking about. The predicational, think of a policeman, tell me what he has. The non-referential, Mary has a jello soup and cereal to eat. What can she eat it all with? They have to say a spoon. So again, we're looking at pragmatics versus world knowledge. And here we can see the results. Here the dark is the specific. The next one is the predicational, where you need world knowledge. And the third bar is the non-referential, where you need the pragmatics. So what we see again is that the condition where the world knowledge is sufficient for the children to use the indefinite article shows a better performance compared to the two conditions where you need the pragmatics. And the same performance you see across the board. For that particular condition, there was no difference between the three groups. But we see also a lot of variation between the groups, and this may be the reason why there was no significant difference between them. But also previous research has shown that children with SLI have problems with definite articles. So there hasn't been research showing they have difficulties with indefinite articles. So that goes hand in hand with previous research. So to summarize, we can see that for definite articles, the condition where world knowledge is important is better than where discourse pragmatics is relevant, and that SLI children perform like the vocabulary controls, who are younger children. For the indefinite articles, again, world knowledge was better than discourse pragmatics, but the three groups don't differ from each other. So we can say that if you have a condition where you require discourse pragmatics within a sentential context, that is more demanding than a condition where the world knowledge gives you the cue for definiteness. And children with SLI seem to have a delay in terms of the definite articles. Now the next study is comparing definite articles in monolingual children, bilingual children, and children with SLI. But these are the data from the Greek side of the project. So these are the three groups at the bottom of the of this diagram. And so that's going to give us an information about how do the children with SLI compare to the other two groups. And for that study, we had production tasks similar to the ones I presented, but also we used an online comprehension task to see how they process ungrammaticalities or sentences with a violation if you omit an article. So what happens? Are they sensitive to the omissions? Now the study was on Greek, so I have a couple of slides about Greek, because probably that is going to look Greek to you. So let me introduce that aspect. So in Greek we have gender, masculine, feminine, and neuter, and we also have case. And every article has a different form. There is some syncretism, so we don't have nine different forms. So that gives us masculine, feminine, and neuter, nominative, accusative, and genitive within the singular. And so we can see the forms of the definite article in each one of those cells. So for the neuter, nominative and accusative has exactly the same form. So there is some syncretism. The articles are monosyllabic, they are unstressed, and they are adjoined to the noun, and that's why we call them clitics, because you can't really use them independently, they have to be adjoined to another word. Greek also has clitic pronouns, and these are pronouns which are also unstressed, and they are adjoined to the verb. And they have more or less the same form with a definite article. So that's why we wanted to compare the two forms. So here we can see the forms of the clitic pronoun in the accusative, in the singular, and in the plural. The Greek system of noun phrases is also slightly different from the English one. So there are some differences. For example, in Greek we can't use bare nouns in the subject position, so we can't say dogs bite, so we have to say the dogs bite. We can't say sugar is sweet, we have to say the sugar is sweet. So we have overproduction of definite articles. In the object position, we can have a noun without the definite article. So we can say, she buys carrots, she's cooking meat. So we don't have to say, she buys the carrots. And there are some contexts where we can have a bare singular count noun. He's buying a house on the beach. So we can say, he's buying house. And then we're not talking about a specific house, we're saying, we're talking about the notion of house. So there is the difference between subject and object. So in the object, we can drop the article. In the subject, we have to have the definite article all the time. In terms of clitic pronouns refer to an object which is known to the hearer and the speaker. So we cannot introduce new information with a clitic pronoun. And here we have an example. We can say this is a lion and this is a deer. So we introduce lion and deer. And then if we ask, what does the lion do to the deer? In English you would say, it bites it. And in Greek we would say, it bites. So it, that is the object. And Greek is a prodrop language, so we don't have to use the subject. So that's why we don't have the subject. So for this study, we had children of similar age to the studies here in the UK, so between the age of 5 and 8.5, 9 years old. The children were matched on their age, and this is, gives you the age range. The bilingual children were slightly older than the monolingual children with SLI, and this was because it's very difficult to recruit children with SLI, so we were recruiting as many children as possible, and so the age at the end didn't match. That would predict if the L2 children are older, if age is an important factor, we would predict that the L2 children should perform better than the children with SLI. You see later on that this is not the case. So at the end, age didn't really act as a confounding factor for the study, because the children who were older did not perform better. So we matched the children on several aspects, but there are also important differences. So the children with SLI had slightly lower nonverbal abilities than the monolingual children, because the monolingual children had slightly above average language nonverbal abilities. And in terms of the DVAQ is a test of grammar. So that shows us that the monolingual typically developing children have a higher score than the bilingual children and the children with SLI. But those two groups don't differ from each other. So they have more or less the same levels in terms of the grammar abilities. So from this, we would expect that those two groups will perform in a similar way in terms of grammar. So for the production of articles, we use more or less the same tasks that we use for English, but here we were comparing subjects with objects. So here we have the anaphoric condition that requires discourse pragmatics. And we can see the results from the bilingual children compared to the monolingual children with SLI and the monolingual typically developing children. So the monolingual typically developing children are about 100%. We have some outliers. The bilingual children have extremely low scores. So the median is at 0, which means half of the children had 0. They were not using any definite articles. And the children with SLI are surprisingly much better than the sequential bilingual children. So we see a big difference between those groups. We also see a subject-object asymmetry, so they are better in the subject. Subject is the dark, object is the pale, so they were better in the subject condition than the object. And this reflects the system of Greek. In the subject, the article is obligatory in many more contexts than in the object. Here we also have the error types to have a look at what kind of errors they make. We had two types of errors, omission error and substitution errors. So the omission is if they drop the article. The substitution is if they use the indefinite instead of the definite. So what we can see here, this is substitution, this is omission. So we can see that all groups have more omission errors than substitution errors. So they drop the article. I mentioned at the very beginning that Turkish doesn't have definite articles. So we were predicting if they make an error, they will drop the article, because this is what you would do in Turkish. There is no article to express definiteness. So we believe this is the reason why the scores are so low in the sequential bilingual children. For the use of clitics, again we had question answer. So we would present a picture and we would say, look, here is a lion and a deer. The lion is very hungry, and look what's going to happen now. what does the lion do to the deer? So they would say, they would have to say, it bites it, because it's old information, so they have to use a clitic. The figure looks very similar to the articles, so we have bilingual children, sequential bilingual children, monolingual children with SLI, monolingual typically developing children. So the sequential bilingual children have quite low scores, the children with SLI have quite high scores, the monolingual children are at ceiling, the pattern is more or less the same. And in terms of the errors, the groups, again, they make errors of omission rather than errors of commission. Now, I haven't mentioned anything about Turkish. What do they do in terms of clitics? Or what do they do in terms of pronouns? So Turkish is a subject drop and an object drop language. So they can drop the subject and they can drop the object. So they can say bites, and if in the discourse we know who is the subject and who is the object, then we don't have to express the subject and the object. So it seems as if, because in Turkish you don't have to express the object, they are dropping the object in the clitic, in the case of the clitics. The other task we did was a self-paced listening task, which is an online task, because we wanted to measure if we present to the children sentences without a definite article. Are they going to be sensitive that something is missing, or are the sentences going to sound okay to them? So what we did was presenting them sentences phrase by phrase, and they had to press a button to listen to every phrase. And at some point, an article was missing. So here the example, yesterday, so we had a sentence to create a context. Yesterday a dolphin was playing in the sea with the other animals. And then they had to press a button to listen to the next sentence. And every slash indicates where they had to press the button. So they heard late in the afternoon, the dolphin, or dolphin without the article, chased the fish. So we were measuring how long is it going to take them to press the button. The prediction is, if they are creating a syntactic structure and a discourse representation online, they should expect a definite article for something which is already known in the context. So we would expect, if they hear dolphin, for them to take longer to press the button than if they hear the dolphin, because subconsciously they will be processing and thinking, well, why is it dolphin? This is old information. But they have to press the button very quickly, so they actually don't have time to think about it. So we're measuring the subconscious reflex of processing the sentence in real time. So we had again subject and object for Greek to see if there is a difference between the two. And we also had something similar for clitic pronouns. And here what was missing was the object. So the deer was really scared when the lion bit it in the jungle on the rock. Now, and also I have an example, so they would see a picture, they would hear a sentence as the context, and then they would hear the target sentence. Now, do we have any speakers of Greek? We don't. So then I'm not going to play the sentence. I'm going to play just the minimal pair so that you can hear what is the difference between bit and bitted. So acoustically, you can hear the difference. So the second one has also to. So even if you don't speak Greek, you can hear that there is a difference between the two conditions. That was our minimal pair. So here I'm showing you reaction times in milliseconds. So the highest the number, the longer the reaction time. And we expect for the ungrammatical, for the drop, the reaction time to be higher. than in the grammatical. So here we see definite article in the subject position, and the lines with the rounds, these are with the circles, is the sequential bilingual children. The triangles are the children with SLI. The squares are the typically developing children. And the straight line is the grammatical. The dotted line is the ungrammatical. So we expect the ungrammatical to be above the grammatical. The critical segment is the one in yellow here. And so we can see here, monolingual typically developing children, dotted line is higher than the straight line. And the same thing is in the other two conditions. So all three groups take longer to press the button when the article is missing. The same effect was present in the object position. Again, dotted line higher than straight line in all three groups. And for the clitic objects, that was the case for the typically developing monolingual and bilingual children, but the children with SLI did not show a difference between grammatical and ungrammatical. So to summarize those results, we find better performance in the subject than the object, which is reflecting the Greek article system. Lower performance in the bilingual children compared to the other two groups. Errors of omission compared to substitution. And all groups are sensitive to the errors of omission. And in terms of clitics, everything is the same apart from the last part. Children with SLI are not sensitive to the omission in the online task. So then we have a question. How come those children, for definite articles, if the sequential bilingual children are not using any articles, why are they sensitive when the article is dropped? And here, for the children with SLI, if they're using clitics, why are they not sensitive when the clitic is dropped? So we have a story. For the children with SLI, we talked with speech and language therapists in Greece, and apparently they do a lot of work in remediating clitics and remediating articles. So what we think is going on is that because of the work they're doing with clitics, the children may be able to produce clitics because they're doing a lot of remediation in terms of their production. So they develop some strategies to be able to produce clitics, but that does not necessarily mean that they have internalized the rule. So when they're listening to sentences, actually they may not be listening and creating the abstract representations of the noun phrases to require a clitic, but have developed a strategy to be able to produce it in real time. So the automaticity may be missing for the clitics. And on the other hand, for the sequential bilingual children, they may have reassembled, so they may have developed the abstract system of representations of the definite articles, but production is very demanding. So this may be an output problem. So they may have difficulties to produce the articles, and that's why we see that they are dropping the articles in their production. So this is the story that we have created, and we have when we published those papers on the SLI and the L2 children. This is now a new hypothesis that has to be tested by using some other experiments to look at production and try to lower the demands to see whether by lowering the production demands, are the sequential bilingual children going to produce them? And for the children with SLI, increasing the demands and see whether they will drop them. So the conclusion from those two studies is that production tasks may highlight weaknesses in L2 children that relate to the production system. And on the other hand, online comprehension tasks may be more sensitive to uncover subtle differences between the groups. So that's why we believe it's very important not to use just one task, but use multiple tasks that put different demands on the comprehension of their production system, because that can tell us something more about the developing language system in the different groups. Now, the third study is the study on autism, and I see that I have another 7 minutes. And I think I'm going to be able to present that in 7 minutes. It's quite interesting because children with autism, we know they have difficulties in discourse pragmatics. So the question is, how do those children perform when you give them a task that puts demands on that particular domain of grammar? So that study comes from a project that ran a couple of years ago in Greece, and that was looking at the language profile of Greek children with autism. So because that was also in Greek, we used exactly the same tasks in order to be able to compare children with SLI and children with autism. So the children with SLI are the ones that you already saw earlier, and that shows us the characteristics of the children with autism. So the age ranges are similar. They are, again, between the age of 5 and 8. Those children with ASD were recruited from centers for autism, so they were already diagnosed with ASD. And each child with autism was matched to a typically developing child on their language abilities in terms of the vocabulary. So we wanted to have children at more or less the same language level to see whether they will perform differently in terms of the phenomena that we were looking at. We used Raven's nonverbal abilities task to make sure that the nonverbal abilities are within the norms, and they were. And the DVAQ are the grammar task. So we can see that the children with SLI are similar to the children with ASD. And the typically developing children are slightly better than the children with ASD in terms of the grammar. But they were matched in terms of their vocabulary. So these graphs show the SLI children. So this is the graph that you saw earlier. And I've put next to it the data from the autistic children. So we see ASD versus typically developing children. And if you compare the two figures, they look very similar. So the children with ASD are better in the subject than in the object position, and there is a very large range in terms of the object compared to the subject. So the profile looks very similar. And these are the error types that also look very similar. So more errors of omission compared to substitution. So we also used the task for the production of clitics, and the figures look almost the same. So we have several errors in the children with ASD, similar to the children with SLI. Now, we were not intending to match the groups, but as it turns, the data look almost identical. And so these are also the errors for the ASD look very similar to the errors of the children with SLI. So we see that there is a similar profile in children with SLI and ASD in the production of definite articles, and that was the anaphoric condition that requires discourse pragmatics. And of course, it also requires syntax, because articles are functional categories. So it's the interface between syntax and discourse pragmatics. So we know children with SLI have difficulties with grammar. We know that children with ASD have difficulties with discourse pragmatics. When we see that we find a similar profile, actually we don't know why. It could be because the children with SLI have difficulties with syntax, the children with ASD have difficulties with discourse pragmatics, and that's why we see a similar profile. So from those data, we actually can't tell why the profile is different. So to find that out, we did a follow-up study. And I have another 5 minutes, so I'm going to present the follow-up study that actually shows us what the underlying difficulty is for the children with ASD. So we recruited another 20 children with ASD and another 20 typically developing children, and we have more or less the same protocol in terms of recruitment, in terms of matching. So the two groups were matched on the vocabulary, and the children with ASD were high functioning, so that means that their nonverbal abilities were within the norms and the vocabulary was quite high. So we didn't have any children who were low functioning in terms of nonverbal abilities or the language abilities was particularly low. We had the same baseline tasks, so we measured the nonverbal abilities, their vocabulary and the morphosyntax. But in terms of experimental task, we used different conditions to look at effects of syntax, discourse pragmatics and prosody, because we know that children with ASD have difficulties with prosody. So we used clitics, as in the previous study, that measure syntax and pragmatics. We used the clitic left dislocation condition that is quite complex and demanding in terms of syntax, and I'll show you an example and illustrate why. We also had full noun phrases like the dog, which is article and noun, and that requires pragmatics to decide whether you're going to use the definite or the indefinite article. And we also have one condition, which is a condition for with contrastive stress. So here we have also prosody that gives you a cue about what kind of noun phrase you have to produce. So this looks at pragmatics and prosody together. So that shows us the results from clitics. So as in the previous study, so we have here ASD and TD. Children with ASD had lower performance than typically developing children. So that shows us we replicated the results of the previous study. So we know that there are difficulties with clitics, but we don't know why, whether it's syntax or pragmatics. The condition for clitic left dislocation is similar to clefts in English. So we have reference in a picture, so we can say, here is a cat, a wolf and a goat. Who kisses the cat? And then we show another picture. And then we have a completion task. So we say the cat. And then the children have to say it kisses the wolf. So they have to use the object, the cat, her kisses the wolf, because we have the fronted noun phrase. They have to use, and it's old information, they have to use the clitic. So we have the object, the cat, and the pronoun. So we are doubling the object. That's why it's called, and it's called clitic left dislocation, because we are doubling the noun phrase on the left. So it's quite complex because you have to use the object twice, once as a full noun phrase, once as an object. So that is more demanding in terms of syntax. Now, interestingly, in that condition, there was no difference between the children with ASD and the typically developing children. So that shows us that if you have more demanding syntax, the system doesn't break down. So they're able to handle complex syntax. So why are they failing when you have a simpler syntax? We have another condition where we are measuring pragmatics. So this is a context where you show a picture and you say, here's a wolf, here's a cat, what does the wolf do? And then they see the next picture. So they have to say, he hugs the cat. So they have to use hugs the cat, a definite article. So here is the discourse that tells you what to use. And the one with a contrastive stress, we are introducing everything. Here is a sheep, a wolf, and a cat. Who is the wolf hugging? And then we use contrastive stress to say the cat. So this is like the clefts. It is the cat that the wolf hugs. So they need to be able, if they're sensitive to the contrastive stress, then they should not use eclitic pronoun here. They have to use just the verb. But if they are not sensitive to the stress on the first noun phrase, they may interpret it similarly to this condition, and they may use the clitic. So the difference between this one and the other one is that here there is no contrastive stress. In the other condition, we have contrastive stress. And the stress determines whether you're going to use a clitic, like here, or just a verb, like in this condition. So those results show us the blue bars are when we require a noun phrase, and the green, again, when we require a noun phrase, and the difference is in terms of the context. And the contrastive stress is the yellow bar. So we can see that the difference between the two groups is when contrastive stress is involved. So when contrastive stress is involved, the children with ASD have a low performance. And what is the errors that they make? They use a clitic instead of just using the verb. So they're creating a structure which is syntactically more complex rather than using the verb. So this follow-up study has shown us that children with ASD have some difficulties with clitics. They're quite good in clitic left dislocation, although it is syntactic demanding. They are sensitive to the context in the production of noun phrases, but they don't benefit from the intonation, so they can't really use the contrastive stress to decide to use a simple structure, just the verb, and they're using clitics. So the conclusion for the ASD study is that it seems as if the children with ASD don't seem to have difficulties with syntax, so the errors they make are not related to complex syntax. They are sensitive to the discourse information, but they are not sensitive to the intonation cues presented through contrastive stress, and this is what makes them make errors in the use of clitics. So what is the take-home message? First of all, when we're looking at a specific structure, it's very important to look at very specific conditions and compare the conditions with each other, because we saw that for the definite articles and the indefinite articles, it does matter if the information for the definite or the indefinite comes from the world knowledge or from the discourse. If we don't control for that, we may find some mixed results because we didn't control for the particular sentences in our experiment. So linguistic theory is actually very important in terms of selecting the material very, very carefully for what we're measuring. And the second one is combining different methodologies is also very important, because we may find different results if we do a production task than if we do a comprehension task, and then if we do an online comprehension task, because every task has different demands on the production and the comprehension system of the participants that we're looking at. So a combination of the tasks and the combination of the conditions is more likely to help us uncover the strengths and the weaknesses of the particular populations we're looking at. Because although sometimes the pattern looks the same, the weaknesses and the reasons why there are difficulties may be different. So I'd like to thank the team. So that was not my work. I didn't go out to collect the data. I didn't go out to design all those experiments. Vicky Chondrogianni was the postdoc in the study with the Dutch. collaborators, and she did the most of the work for the Greek and the Dutch data and the English data. I would like to thank the speech and language therapists who helped in terms of the recruitment and the SENCOs here in the UK. There was a large group of research assistants who collected data, and also the schools, the children and the families who gave the consent to take part of in the study and collect all this data. So that was it. Thank you.